Headlines.
Live from Washington, D.C., the capital of the divided states of America, it's time for the show that brings you both sides of the issues that matter. In the left corner, I'm political analyst and progressive Democrat Garland Nixon.
And in the right corner, I am ecstatic Republican investigative reporter Lee Stranahan. It's a good day, Garland.
Welcome to the most disruptive show in America, Fault Lines, with Nixon and Stranahan. In round one, Lee's buddy Steve Bannon is OWT at the White House. OWT.
Which is another way of saying he's been released from the swamp and will be unleashed on the world.
There we go.
Let's be clear on that.
Was this a direct result of the American Prospect interview, or did maybe he conducted the interview in anticipation of being let go? We'll discuss that in round one. In round two, terror attacks in Europe. There's information being circulated that the U.S. intelligence warned the local government a few months back that attacks were imminent. Is it even possible to stop random low-tech terror attacks like that? And in round three, it's Friday's weekly roundup. As we talk Ukraine, Julian Assange, and check this out, there is a major free speech rally. We'll discuss as Lee mourns the death of his YouTube account, speaking about free speech, and planned in Boston. That and more coming up on today's episode of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. So if you're listening out there on 105.5 FM in Washington, D.C., enjoy it. But if for some reason you can't, there are a myriad of other ways, a plethora of other ways to listen. Number one, you got to sign up. You got to go to iTunes and you got to sign up. That way you'll be notified when the show goes up after we do the show. And then you can download it and you can do the podcast thing. Also, don't forget to leave a review and to leave a five-star rating. Additionally, you can go to Sputnik News Agency's Facebook page and you can watch radio. That's right. You can watch us. You can see my bright orange shirt, and you can see Lee in his fashionable blue jacket with a red, white, and blue.
And I do look fantastic today, by the way. I'll talk about that in a second, but I do look phenomenal today.
And I'm kind of looking bright like one of those, what is that, the guy that does the Little Sun sausage advertisements?
I'm going to say this. You look sane today because it's like 105. The temperature is 105 degrees, so I'm the dummy, and you're the one dressed. But I look.
But at least you look good.
I'm dressed like a ventriloquist dummy, but you're the smart one.
You got on shorts and what have you.
When you run out of here at the end of the day, you're not going to be wanting to murder yourself like I am.
I'm not going to pass out before I get to the corner. I'll put it like that.
And by the way, if you're listening on 105.5, just look to the lane to the right and see if Steve Bannon's in the car with a box of stuff. It's possible. Steve could be listening right now, in fact.
Right, yeah. Or call him if you need, like, a racquetball partner Monday morning. He's got time on his hands.
I don't know about that. I don't know. We'll talk about that, but I don't know about that.
Okay, so, and last but not least, as far as the housekeeping is concerned, if you go to @Stranahan, you want to follow Lee Stranahan and be one of his 874 billion, thousand, million, hundred thousand followers.
It's 81,000 or
something. Well, I was close. But you can check it out on, follow Lee, and you can check this out on Periscope. And he actually does all three of the segments separately with a really cool camera. And so you can check it out. Also follow me @GarlandNixon. So right now, you can go to the Facebook page. And the great thing about the Facebook video is the Facebook Live on Sputnik News is you can share it right to your timeline on Facebook. Well, I think that's pretty much it for this segment.
What do you say? We should mention this for housekeeping. Let's thank Vice News on HBO last night, who did, I thought, a very good feature on Sputnik Radio. I thought it was fair. It indicated, for instance, that I'm the only Trump supporter here.
Yes, they did.
They featured both of us, but they also featured Eugene. They also featured Brian, some of the other hosts. And they brought out quite clearly, Brian said, I'm a socialist. That's what Brian said. He didn't say, I'm a socialist. He said, he's a socialist.
He didn't say, Lee's a socialist.
That's right, because that's completely inaccurate. But I like that. I like the fact that they did a segment that made it clear that we are not Trump apologists here.
Right.
I'm the only pro-Trump person, and I agree with Trump about 75% of the time, I would say. That number could go down in the future. It's possible with Steve being gone. But I thought they did a nice job on the segment last night, and you can find it on HBO's Vice News tonight.
Yeah, and you can generally, with Vice News, it's on that HBO To Go and in On Demand. So usually you can go into HBO and you're On Demand or the HBO To Go, which is an On Demand service. And you can check out the Vice News. Just look for yesterday's date, which would be the 17th, 18th, whatever it was.
And also they had Mindia, our producer and our boss on there. And as my son said, it was an accurate representation of how much Mindy laughs.
Yeah, it was. It really was.
One of the dominant personality characteristics of Mindy is he laughs a lot. In fact, that's one of the things my son said when he started hanging around. I said, well, you know, it's Russian fun. What do you think of the Russians? He said he laughs a lot more than I pictured. So there you go. So this is the Cold War hysteria.
Yeah, because it was supposed to be like Siegfried and Stockard in Chaos, where every time Stockard would laugh, right. Siegfried would say, this is chaos. We don't hear.
That's right. But yeah, but you can see Mindy laughing a lot in the segment, which is, by the way, 100. That
pretty
is
much
correct.
That's pretty much Mindy.
That is 100% accurate. So he's an easy laugh.
So the question here is that we've heard a couple of things. We know that Steve Bannon is out. We have heard, I recently read something, one of the tickers.
The New York Times reported that he resigned.
Well, I read a ticker across the bottom.
Yes.
One of them said he resigned. Then another one said General Kelly tossed him, I'm paraphrasing, but General Kelly was behind it, and that Kelly is not finished cleaning house. I don't know how much truth there is to this. But what do you, you're an inside guy, Lee.
Well.
You can let, I'm going to sit aside and you tell us what you're hearing.
Both are true. In other words, Steve submitted his resignation in early August, around the 7th. I had heard rumors of that. And I've been saying on the show for a while, the question is whether Steve wants to stay or not. Remember?
Yeah, as late as yesterday.
No, but you know I've been saying that for weeks,
right,
as well. I've been saying that for weeks
And you've also been saying that there's been people saying to him from the outside, which makes sense. Look, man, why do you want to stick around?
That's
you can
exactly
do bigger
right.
and better
and
things
said,
and have more fun elsewhere.
And I said yesterday, I look at that interview as he didn't have anything to lose. Now, the other quote, Robert Costa, who's with the Washington Post, reported something that I've said as well. Bannon's plan now is not to trash the president. That's not my plan either.
So you don't think he's mad at the president for... Well, look, there's two ways.
I think the
whether
president's
or not he's
been
mad
led
at
astray.
The president, or whether or not he puts a priority on his agenda over whether or not he's mad at the president. If you understand what I'm getting.
But let's talk about part of the timing that's really significant here. The NSC is meeting today.
Yeah, National Security Council.
Exactly right. To discuss Afghanistan. Now, what they're going to come out of that saying is, we're going to send troops into Afghanistan. That's McMaster's plan. What Bannon told, what Costa reported, is that he's heard Bannon is not going to be going after the president, but is going to be going. Who did Bannon go after in that interview? Gary Cohn.
Right.
Right. You're going to hear him go after McMaster.
Went after his enemies within the inner circle of the president.
That's exactly right. The enemies of Donald Trump's
agenda.
Keep
in mind this also, Lee, and that is that over the last couple of weeks, McMaster, since Kelly got there, McMaster has been cleaning all of the, what he perceived as, apparently as the Flynn or Bannon allies, he's been clearing them out of the NSC.
Yeah, but I want to make this not about people. I want to make it about the ideas. Does that make sense?
Right.
There's an agenda that Trump ran on. So I did a Periscope today, and I asked people in the Periscope, I said, how many of you are in favor of increasing troop strength in Afghanistan?
Yeah, pretty much none, wasn't it?
None. It was none. It was 50 people who said, no.
Everyone, I went on Fox News. You know, I'm a Democrat. I went on Fox News. I did an hour show on Fox News, you know, a couple months ago. And the one tweet that Fox did of me from that show was when I said, I'd just take all of our troops out and bring them all home. And that was the most popular tweet. That was the one that everybody. So I saw right then the conservatives are weary of these foreign wars, and conservatives are ready to, they don't
and
want
forget,
more.
Let's forget conservatives for a second. Trump supporters. Let's forget conservative. Steve Bannon has his finger in the pulse of populism, and he did before he was with the Trump campaign, and that's why I'm ecstatic right now. I'm thrilled.
I'm thinking
ecstatic? How do you say that?
If you're out of the way things have been going for the Trump administration the last couple months, I imagine anybody would be happy to get out of that zoo.
No, but that's not what it is, because here's what it is. The Trump administration goes on. It's going to keep going. Now, the enemies of the agenda, Cohn, McMaster, all those guys, great. You break it, you bought it. You clean house, guys. You are just about to unleash the fury of the Trump base, who are going to say, this is not what I voted for. Now, here's the next question. How long will it take before Trump realizes he's surrounded by snakes? I think this is going to start to unravel by Christmas. That's what I think. I think this is going to start to unravel by Christmas.
How about this? Here's another possibility. what, you know, the nature of Trump is you push, he push, pushes back. What if Bannon goes out and Bannon says, you know, Cohn, whoever, the people that he doesn't like, he goes after them, right?
Yes.
Isn't it also possible that Trump perceives that as an attack on him? I think
no.
it's a, I'm not saying
no.
he will or won't. I'm saying, I'm just throwing it out as a possibility.
He perceives
that as attack on him and his decision-making process, and he goes back after Bannon.
What is Donald Trump going to do when he goes in front of a rally of Trump supporters and hears crickets or boos? What's he going to hear? If he were to walk out on stage in front of Trump supporters and goes, well, we got rid of Steve Bannon today. Boo. That's what he's going to hear. Crickets and boos. He's not going to hear cheers. By the way, if he went out and he said, well, we fired McMaster today, he would hear cheers. The base doesn't like him. And so I'm just really super realistic about this. This is not my ideology. I'm not trying to say what I want to happen. If Trump starts to go after Bannon that way, Bannon hits back hard too. And he's literally unleashed. He has not been in the media for about a year now. Steve Bannon's
right now, the other part of it is this. Bannon's out. There was all this turmoil over the last couple of weeks. Every microphone in America right now is on a truck chasing Steve Bannon. Right now, if you saw Steve Bannon driving around the Beltway, you would see a line of satellite trucks speeding behind him, you know, hanging with guys hanging out the window, sticking a microphone in the window, trying to get a comment. So he's going to have the opportunity, all he wants to say whatever he wants to, because the microphones will be chasing him around.
And he hates the media. And Bannon gets it. He gets it. The one quote they had of mine last night that I liked was where I talked about the dummies in the mainstream media. And I'm like, well, that's an accurate representation of my views. Look, he hates the media. When I mentioned to Bannon that I was in the White House briefing room, he just sent me a tell you, he's like, I hate them. He's like, I hate them. I said, me too. I said, you can tell how much they hate the administration, everything it stands for. So everybody, now here's the other thing that's going to happen. The snakes who are surrounding Donald Trump now have been telling him, hey, we just need to get rid of Steve Bannon. We get rid of him. Watch your popularity.
Everything will smooth right out if
you
can only get rid of Bannon.
You think the media, now that Bannon's out, is going to start being on Trump's side?
Oh, they'll love him.
No.
I'm just joking.
Never going to happen. Now, by the way, they might sort of support the troop movement. They might support the foreign policy. But they're going to brutalize Trump every single day. And he's going to quickly realize that his daughter, the princess, ain't going to help him. Now, by the way, that's what I just said Bannon would never say, because I went after Trump's daughter and people are afraid of doing that. I've never been afraid of doing that. She's the way they got to Trump. But I got to say this too, Garland. This is an object lesson for anybody who tries to take on the establishment. They will take you out at the knees. And it's the same thing that would happen to Bernie. I guarantee you, it's the same thing that would happen to Bernie. I'm not saying it would succeed because I'm not trying to predict the future.
I know what you're saying.
I'm saying that it's absolutely what they would try to do.
A member of Congress once said to me, never forget this, Garland, whenever you fight City Hall fights back. And that was the bottom line. That's when you run it up again. This was a person who took a lot of heat because of a decision that they made. And when he explained it to me, you know, he was the chairman of a committee and many people wanted him to do something and he wanted to do it, but he was told by the person who was in charge of that body of Congress at that time, if you do it, you lose your chairmanship. So, and if you tell anybody that I told you that, you know, you're gone. So, yeah. I understand. It's a mess up there. It's a rough institution. But I think that what I'm going to be looking out for is this. When Bannon is gone, and I suspect Bannon's going to go after the people in the administration that he is unhappy with, policy-wise, I don't think you can predict whether or not Trump views it as, okay, he's an ally on the outside who's working with me, or he interprets it as that's an attack on me and my
own.
But
play chess with me here.
How Trump.
I don't care how Trump reacts. Let me explain. I don't care how he reacts, because ultimately the base is going to be with Bannon. And the base is going to be like, he makes a good point. 80% of the base is going to go, Steve's making a good point. Oh, Steve, that's what I'd like Trump to say. Then if Trump starts to realize that Bannon is a kingmaker and Trump is not, you see what I'm saying?
Right. Well, then here's what that means. That means that here's something I've been saying recently, that Trump is becoming more and more isolated. You know, we got the Corker statement. We got more and more people.
Yes.
Who are, he's becoming more. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue he hasn't become more isolated, not less isolated. If, in fact, he has his base and he has his Bannon people and he doesn't have as many as a few, he's lost, shed some people. If Bannon is, say, representing his base and Bannon says whatever, something that we know what Bannon says his base will probably be in favor of, and Trump goes against it, then he's totally isolated. You know what I mean?
Yes,
I mean,
that's, at that point, and by the way, that was the goal
of the whole
time. He loses
everything. He doesn't even have his base anymore.
Now, let me address something else, because I've been getting calls from reporters all day. Also, I want to thank InfoWars and Roger Stone. I was on InfoWars today, which is why I'm dressed like a monkey.
A very well-dressed monkey,
Watching, but people have asked me whether Bannon's going to go back to Breitbart. And I don't know that. The reason I think Bannon had, I don't have any inside information, but people are like, well, he got the dispensation to talk to Breitbart. Well, yeah, because he had a business relationship there. You follow me? Like here. If I stopped working here to go work at the White House, I don't have an investment in Sputnik. Does that make sense?
Right, yeah.
He had an investment in Breitbart. So there were business aspects of it. Now, here's what to watch today. Tell me what this, Garland, tell me what this means to you. I went to the Breitbart news site. And by the way, there are cowardly weasels at Breitbart. If anyone wants to see that, read the New York Times article on them that'll be out on Sunday. It's up already. They want to be liked. That's what I mean by cowardly weasels. Now, what does this tell you? Breitbart's headline, this broke on Drudge, and then it broke on the New York Times. Breitbart's headline was, report, Bannon out at White House. What does that tell you about the relationship?
They won't come out and say it. They're saying that there's a report. They're not reporting it themselves. It's almost like they're pointing to someone else. Oh, by the way, that guy over there, like they're afraid to say it.
No, it's almost like Bannon didn't call them. That's what happened. Bannon didn't call them.
Oh, okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That tells you very clearly, if Bannon was still
tight with Breitbart,
right, and especially if he was going to go back there for sure, he'd give them the scoop. Does that make sense?
Yeah, let's kill the one conspiracy theory I said yesterday. So yesterday, I like to identify my conspiracy theories. And I said, Bannon leaves. He goes to Fox and takes over Ailes' position. Bannon ain't going. One of the reasons, I may be wrong, but, you know, Rupert Murdoch's son wrote this big article, anti-Trump article. The word is,
yes.
The word on the street, word on the street, you know, that the word I'm hearing in the back alleys is, then the front alleys, that Rupert Murdoch was pressuring Trump saying Bannon's out. So I really don't think Bannon's going to Fox. Doesn't sound like he has a real tight up.
Bannon's smartest play would be to do his own thing, right?
That like
would
be maybe a new site, a new website, a new something like that.
Or maybe, he's done media. He's successfully built Breitbart. There's not a question in the world he built Breitbart. He built Breitbart into a major player, and he could do that again starting from scratch.
All right, so you're listening to Fault Lines. We will be back in round two. There's to talk about terror attacks in Europe. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Fault Lines.
Welcome to round two of Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan. If you just tuned in, you can go to Lee's Periscope at Stranahan, and you can check it out on Twitter. You can watch us live, or you can also go to Sputnik News Facebook page, and you can watch us. You can watch radio. That's right. You can watch us, and you can share that Facebook live feed on your page. And don't forget, wherever, make sure you share it. If you're watching us on Lee's Periscope at Stranahan, following Lee, I'm at Garland Nixon. Make sure you share the Periscope wherever we're at. And most importantly, if you're on 105.5 FM in Washington, D.C., tell your friends, make sure you put it up online. Hey, I'm listening on 105.5 FM, et cetera. Okay, so the terror attacks in Europe, a couple of things about it. One of the things that's coming out now is that the U.S., and I think this is something that, to me, kind of confuses people. The CIA advised, I guess, the Spanish government or whatever a long time ago, several months back, they gave them some intelligence that there was this type of thing may happen. I go back to Boston, the Boston Marathon, where apparently there was some information earlier that the Tsarnaev brothers may be involved in nefarious activities related to terrorism, et cetera. I think, Lee, people get a little, are mistaken about how easy it is or difficult it is to stop terrorism. You know, I was in law enforcement. I was a very high-ranking member of law enforcement, worked with the governor's cabinet. I worked with the JTTF, Joint Terrorism Task Force, with the FBI. And, you know, in our discussions, one thing I can tell you that it's of common knowledge, and I'm talking FBI, JTTF when I work with them, and that is this. Here's the fact of the matter. It's very difficult to stop a person who wants to drive down the street on a given random day. You know, the random, the really low-tech attacks where somebody just takes a car and drives it into something or takes some knives and start, you know, attack someone. As much as it would seem that you'd want the intelligence agencies to be able to stop these things, they can stop. You know, they can check people, they can check people's backgrounds, but low-tech, somewhat random terrorist attacks are near impossible to stop. And the second part of that being, as ISIS loses ground in Syria, which is a good thing, you know, as they're losing this so-called caliphate, I suspect, maybe I'm right or wrong, and you may think the same thing, that as they lose the actual territory that they have in the Middle East, that they may turn to, okay, well, you know, we're losing our ground, but hey, I got an idea. We can make up for it with random terror attacks. What are your thoughts?
Okay, well, a couple of things. Let's define lone wolf terrorism, because a lot of people, even people who mean well, misrepresent what lone wolf terrorism is. Okay. Lone wolf terrorism, in my opinion, is a distinction from cell-based terrorism. What do I mean by that? We saw this in 9/11. For instance, 9/11 was a large coordinated attack where they sent people over at different points. There was training involved. They had people training in different parts, right? And it was not one plane, not two planes, but they had really four. Remember, they tried to do four.
Yep. Well financed, very well financed.
Very well financed, right? Now, lone wolf is distinct from cell based, but it's not distinct from there being a command and control structure. Does that make sense? In other words, you can still, lone wolf does not mean somebody randomly decides to go out and start killing people. So let's compare that with Nidal Hassan. Nidal Hassan was the person who did the Fort Hood shooting. Okay? What we know for a fact is that Hassan was talking to Anwar al-Awlaki.
Was he the blind sheik?
No, not the blind sheik. Anwar al-Awlaki was the American-born imam who was the imam for several of the 9/11 hijackers, right, who we drone struck. We killed al-Awlaki. The Obama administration killed al-Awlaki a few years ago. But he became effectively the leader of al-Qaeda. Now, what did al-Awlaki do? He talked to Nidal Hassan for months and months and months. And al-Awlaki had several channels that he talked to people through. He had a whole bunch of email accounts. On some of them, he would offer imam advice. Which here's what I mean by that. If you're a Muslim, there are things in the Quran that forbids killing, particularly other Muslims. So how do you get around that? And the answer is someone has to explain to you theologically, oh, no, it's okay,
right, yeah.
In this case.
It's a theological interpretation.
That's right.
Basically.
Now, that's not sufficient, by the way, that's not the same as saying, you go kill somebody and do that.
Right.
But al-Awlaki would also do that. He would do them on separate email accounts. So he talked to Hassan about both of them. And my point here is, yes, kind of. When you say they're impossible to stop, they're harder to stop, but they're not impossible to stop. Here's the other thing al-Awlaki did. He started Inspire magazine. Inspire magazine is the al-Qaeda magazine where those guys in Boston who did the
Tsarnaev brothers.
The Tsarnaev brothers. That's where they got the idea to do the bomb that they did, the pressure cooker bomb.
Right.
Using simple pressure cooker. You can buy it any place where culinary implements are sold.
Kind of thing.
That's right.
And Inspire magazine. It makes sense.
That's where they got that. That's where they got that. So what I'm saying is that lone wolf terrorism is a different type of attack, but there is, in fact, still a command and control structure that happens. And we've seen this in lone wolf attack after lone wolf attack.
What if we say there is a continuum there, right? Because I've been involved in this discussion, actually, believe it or not, like I said, with people in the intelligence community, with the FBI. What if we say, and there was this discussion, there's a continuum. On one end of the continuum, right? Let's say on one end, there's Al-Qaeda people who are all work together. There's on one end of the continuum, there is the 9/11 attack. Well, finance, coordinated, worldwide, you know what I mean, networks, et cetera, right? You go here, you meet Joe, you give him the password, you know, kind of thing, right? Okay, that's one end. On the other end of the continuum, there is someone who's watching TV, who goes to some websites and sees something, and who doesn't, you know, and we've seen some instances like that, who isn't involved, you know, doesn't have contact with someone. But he watches something, a couple of things on TV. He goes online, he sees a couple of things, and he says, hey, I'm going to do something. And he runs out and he takes a knife and stabs someone where he hasn't had. You know what I mean? So on one end of the continuum, there's, I think you can run along this continuum on the end, the lone wolf end. And I think you can say that a guy who's just watching TV and is inspired because he goes online and he hasn't really talked to anybody and decides to commit attack to is a lone wolf. And I think you can
but
say
that's actually rare. By the way, what you just described is actually rare.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's the far end. That is the ultimate lone wolf.
It is. But what I'm saying is almost all of these attacks with lone wolves, in fact, they had handlers.
Right.
And further,
we have a guy, remember, wasn't there an LAX guy a while back who wanted to kill Jewish people or something? Remember that?
There were.
So, like
there,
you said,
there are some.
That happens occasionally.
But like the guys who did the Charlie Hebdo attack, the guys who did, the San Bernardino attack.
Right.
Right. And by the way, it's not just, and here's why. This is real simple. Most people don't just watch TV and decide to go out and commit murder. And here's why. Here's why you need somebody like an Al-Awlaki dealing with them. Let's say I convince someone that you should die for Allah, right? And that they're down with that. They're like, okay. Well, first off, they have to be at a certain point in their life to agree to that. Then the next day they meet a pretty girl who
they ain't dying.
Who winks at them. Suddenly, exactly right. So you still have to convince them. This is what, by the way, this is not conjecture. This is what Al-Awlaki did. He's constantly giving theological and other pressure. Okay, you need to do this. You need to go along with this. You need to do this. Now, let me also enter a third thing where Al-Qaeda morphed, where Islamist terrorism morphed.
Well, there's one other.
The other end of the continuum is our military attacks. Al-Qaeda became a military group as well. So don't forget, it's in the middle cell terrorism, but at the other end's military.
Like ISIS ended up with full military units with tanks and anti-aircraft weapons and everything. Now, the other part of it is, I hate when that happens. I lost my train of thought. But at any rate, what we're getting at is, I know what I was going to say. Now, I can remember, do you remember the London bombings during the Iraq War? Another element of lone wolf attacks, right, are people who see something. For instance, they look on and they see the Iraq War and they become angry and they say, let's take our revenge. And they see it as a military attack. You know what I'm saying? They're like, okay, we saw this happen. We saw a bombing or drone strike, or we saw the Iraq War. So you get people who see an event that it's not like they run into an imam or they go to Inspire magazine or, you know, you too can be an ISIS.com, a member of ISIS.com. They see something and they say, darn it, I'm going to take an act.
Yeah, but I don't think that's really, that's super rare.
Right, but I'm just saying all of these are elements that.
But what I'm saying
that would probably fall under. Well, let me ask you this. Could you say you have a lone wolf attack that's a person, but also to some extent, couldn't you have kind of a lone wolf cell?
Yeah, no, you've seen that. Like, so for instance, San Bernardino, it wasn't just the guy and it wasn't just his wife. Remember their neighbor who became a Muslim convert through them was later indicted for his role. Now, so how do you look at this from a law enforcement standpoint? And let me point out the exact problem that we have and why McMaster needs to be fired today more than ever. There has been a concerted effort to get people to not understand Islam. In fact, in law enforcement, in the intelligence community, it was called the purge. It happened in 2011, where there was this purge of materials in October 2011. And you're literally not allowed to do training in the FBI or local law enforcement or even the military, you're not allowed to discuss Islam because the theory is, and this is McMaster's explicit theory, that Islamic terrorism really has nothing to do with Islam. My argument is that that's crazy. If you want to understand white supremacist, let's say. Because
Are you sure about that,
I'm 100% sure about it.
Because I know a lot of people in law enforcement community,
I could show you,
and I've never heard. But okay.
I could show you. 100%
sure
I've interviewed.
Links on that.
I would play you the interview, except YouTube deleted my entire account including my interview with Claire Lopez. But I've also gone to the original source documents. You can see it. And I've talked to people in the IC. But it would be like trying to address the white supremacist, let's say, who, by the way, Vice, I'm going to give another thing. They did an interview with a guy. Clearly, a lot of these white supremacist groups are arming up. They are. It's very clear. And by the way,
well, that's been going on for years, though. The militias started like 2008.
It has militias been, but it's picked up in the past few years. It has picked up. And by the way, you get people like Weave and some of these other people who, by the way, are under, and I've got this from a very good source, they're under FBI investigation, which is not a surprise, right? That's not a shock that the FBI would be looking into these guys. But if you're going to understand it, it helps to understand the ideology that motivates it. This is my whole point. This is why it's so important to name radical Islamic terrorism what it is. Because if you don't name it that, then you really don't have any. How do you tell the difference between a Sufi and a Sunni, between a Shia, right? Does it matter? It kind of matters. And the reason it matters is because, as we've talked about before, Saudi Arabia are the people funding a lot of this stuff, including al-Awlaki, clearly funded by the Saudis, right? And when you look at it, if you don't address understanding Islam, it's not the same thing as lumping all of Islam into one bucket. It's exactly the opposite of that to me. It's going, oh, you know what? The funding is coming from the Muslim World League, which is the Saudi-funded charity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the Saudis have gotten off the hook at every stage of the game here, and it's disgusting how much the Saudis have gotten away with simply through lack of reporting and basically because the Saudis throw a lot of money around.
Well, a couple of things. I mean, you know, certainly we're not going to agree when it comes to the importance of using the words radical Islamic terrorism. But you're welcome to your opinion on that. I will say this, and that is that what we see when it comes to terrorism, particularly when it comes to Saudi Arabia, is that countries around the world have priorities, and terrorism ain't at the top of them. Because if terrorism was at the top of the priority list, then they would be addressing the issue of the Saudis funding terrorism. So what happens? When the price of oil starts acting weird, the U.S., there's a lot of companies can go to the Saudis in Kuwait and say, pump us more oil to stabilize the prices, although there's some various weird things going on with that would be a whole nother show the last few years with the tar sands oil. But the bottom line is this. The Saudis have a lot of money in the U.S. economy. They have a lot of power here and in a lot of other countries, and which is what Qatar's done also. Qatar has very wisely sprinkled a lot of money around to get influence in a lot of countries, so much so that now the discussion with the population, with the people on a day-to-day basis is we're concerned about terrorism and we must do everything we can to fight terrorism unless, but this is unsaid, unless that involves pointing the finger at Saudi Arabia. So which means to me, if you'll do everything you can to address terrorism, except point the finger at Saudi Arabia, except address the fact that Saudi Arabia is probably the country that does funds terrorism the most, then terrorism isn't your top priority.
Yeah, but let me go back and try to convince you on this, why calling it radical Islamic terrorism.
Probably ain't going to work, but give it a shot.
Okay, let me try it.
No, probably it ain't going to work, but give it a shot.
Let me try it. If you wanted to address white supremacist terrorism, but you weren't allowed to use the word white supremacist, do you see the problem there? In other words, let me explain it. Let me break it down to so I can make it super clear. If you said, we need to address terrorism by white people, or we need to address terrorism that's, you know, I wouldn't even know what to say. If you can't say it, the reason you do it is because you need to know that this group that's calling themselves the Nationalist Vanguard Anti-Zionist Brigade is more dangerous than this group that's calling themselves the Chamber of Commerce, right?
Right.
In other words, you have to know the distinctions between them. Saying radical Islamic terrorism, the reason it's so important is because there was this information purge. And by the way, it was pushed by Saudi Arabia. What you just said about pointing the finger at Saudi Arabia, I 100% agree with that. The people who don't want you to say radical Islamic terrorism are the Saudis. And the reason why is because once you start to investigate it and start to go, okay, who are the radical Islamists? You go, well, gee, it's the Wahhabist. Well, what country's religion is Wahhabism? It's Saudi Arabia.
You know what else it does? Here's the other problem it does. The neocons always want to argue that the Iranians are the biggest threat
right.
in history.
Yes.
But what happens then? When you start to discuss this, you come to the realization, whether people like it or don't like it, is this, that the if you go outside of the Middle East and you say the terror attacks in Europe, how many of them are come from the Iranians? How many of them are
come
Shia?
From Shia countries
yeah.
at all?
Yeah, right. How many of the you could the Persians? They're all pretty much the
yes.
Salafi, the Wahhabi terrorism. You know what I mean? They're pretty much the not pretty much. They're 100% the brand of terror, of the brand of fundamentalism pushed by the Saudis.
Yes.
And if you discuss that, then it's hard to say that the Iranians are the number one threat to everybody in the world.
Yeah,
doesn't
that,
work.
And that's why naming it's so important to me. But with Bannon gone, the Trump administration, you're not going to hear them do that. Coming up next, we're going to be talking about some of our signature stories in the week. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines. Lines.
We are back. You're listening to the most disruptive radio show in America, Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan, the show that invites Steve Bannon to be a guest. Anytime you want to come on, Steve, anytime. I don't think Steve will be coming in, but anytime he wants to, by the way, he's more than welcome to come in. So I want to do some housekeeping. I want to correct one thing from yesterday. We were talking about the Assange WikiLeaks story, and we talked about Craig Murray.
Right.
And we confused a few of the facts, and I said that I thought Craig Murray was dead, and he's not. Craig Murray is very much alive. Let's clear up just some of this, because I want
to... I imagine that was quite upsetting to Craig Murray if he...
It would be. But here's what it is. There's two different things we were conflating, and I didn't know you were going to bring up the Craig Murray thing. And it's one of those things that honestly, I've never focused on too closely. So I just want to make sure I clear this up. Craig Murray is the person who came out. He's the former British ambassador, and he's connected to WikiLeaks. And he came out and said stuff about the leaks not coming from Russia,
mm-hmm.
that they came from a disgruntled Democrat. That's who Craig Murray is. Now, separately, there's the guy who has passed away, who was the guy who got the material. Does that make sense?
Yes.
These are two separate things. And so I just wanted to clarify. I don't want to get into the weeds on it, but I just wanted to clarify that, A, Craig Murray is very much alive, and we're glad for that.
Yeah, we're happy.
We're happy for that. But that he's also not the guy who got the material. He's the guy who was talking about it, so it's separate. So anyway, I wanted to clear that up. We've had a lot of movement on this Ukraine story. Now, the Ukraine story is something that we've been talking about for weeks, the Ukrainian interference in the election. We talked about in the past couple days how the Ukrainian government has opened up an investigation. This is really, I'm going to say this again, pay attention. The Ukrainian government has opened up an investigation into what role Ukraine played in the DNC, in the United States election, let me put it broadly. That's a big deal that the Ukraine... Now, by the way...
In fact, aren't they talking about it on MSNBC and CNN daily?
Garland is being sarcastic. For those of you not familiar with Garland's dry British sense of humor, he's being sarcastic because the media has completely buried this story. And I say this all the time to people. If you want to see how the media lies to you, listen very carefully to what they don't tell you. I want to say that again. If you want to see how the media lies, listen very carefully to what they don't tell you. So, for instance, if they publish a story that Manafort was proven, Paul Manafort, who is the Trump campaign manager, like they did back in August, if they say, hey, Paul Manafort's name, he's in this secret ledger that the Ukrainians have released getting cash payments, and then they don't report to you that that story was retracted by the same people who put it out months later, they're lying to you.
It's like in law enforcement investigation, when you do statement analysis. One of the things, I probably
yes.
shouldn't tell people that, but one of the things you'll do in law enforcement is you tell somebody, can I get a written statement from you, right? Well, one of the reasons you want to get the written statement is so you can analyze that statement, but you don't analyze it just for what, I mean, you look at, you know, what pronouns they use, you know, when they came home and their husband was laying on the floor, do they write, I walk past the body, as opposed to I walk past my husband lying there, you know, the distance,
right.
So those kind of things. But the bottom line is part of an analysis, an investigation is what did they say? and what did they omit? It can be more important, the fact that they left one tiny little thing, you know what I mean, that they left something out is oftentimes more important than what was in there.
Yeah, now on the right, we call this red pilling. You know, it's from the Matrix.
The blue pill, red pill thing.
Right, exactly right. And what we it's that moment when you realize that the media matrix is lying to you. It's that moment when you're like, oh my gosh, why didn't they tell me this? Because any rule of objective journalism is, if you put out a statement about one thing and then that statement later turns out to be false. And the other example I use all the time, CrowdStrike issued a report on December 22nd about Ukrainian artillery being destroyed by the same malware that was used in the DNC hack. Right?
And then the Russians did it, yeah.
Big deal, right? Russians did it, Ukrainian artillery's destroyed. Within a week or two, the Ukrainians, no friends of the Russians, the current Ukrainian government, right, came out and said, that's not true. Artillery was not destroyed by that. It wasn't even destroyed.
Which makes sense because no country wants to seem like their military is weak. You know, no country wants anybody to think, well, you can wipe their artillery out in 5 minutes with simple malware.
But by the way, they also said it because it didn't happen.
Exactly.
And because when you look at what CrowdStrike got their information from, it was literally from an obscure blogger. You with me?
Right.
Now, this story, when it came out on December 22nd, was reported by every media outlet, New York Times, Washington Post. When CrowdStrike was forced to retract it earlier this year, I want to say around March or April, I don't remember, right around there, because I reported it at the time, but it's been a long year, Garland. When it was reported, none of those news outlets said, oh, by the way, let's update. The thing we did at the beginning of the segment, here's what we did at the beginning of the segment. We got a fact wrong yesterday and we corrected it. This is journalism 101. Garland and I didn't have a big discussion about this. We weren't like, okay, no, wait, should we admit it? Because maybe if people think that Craig Murray, you see what I'm saying?
Exactly.
I just told Garland, here's what happened. I said, hey, we screwed something up yesterday. I'm going to correct it. And Garland said, okay. That was it. There's no discussion about it.
Well, the other part of it is when you recognize, and this is important, recognizing that it's something, look, Lee's on the right, I'm on the left, but here's something that we very much agree on, and that is, okay, you know, once you realize that the media, whoever it is, you know, whatever media, that there is a strong potential that if they're not lying, they have an agenda. Even if they tell you the truth can be limited or there can be things omitted, right? Here's what it means. You can trust yourself. That you can go to Google, that you can Google words, you can Google phrases, that if you find an article about the Ukraine that you think is important, or if Lee and I say, hey, there's something in Politico about the Ukraine, that you can go research that yourself and you don't have to listen to Lee or Garland. And you may say, hey, Garland was right. He got you on that one, Lee, or Lee was right, or both of you guys were right. And that's what we're saying about the Ukraine. It is of significance. It is of significance that right now, with all the talk about Russian interference, that the Ukraine government is doing an investigation on Ukrainian interference into the U.S. election, both, you know, during the primaries and throughout the election. My understanding is there. It's not like whether or not it's the primaries or general election. It's just that there was a lot of there was some level of work.
Now, I want to talk about the ACLU thing, the free speech rally coming up in Boston, but I want to mention one other thing, too, because I found out some new information. I've been talking, we didn't talk about it here much this week, but it's another issue that relates to Ukraine. There's a really good film. I agree with about 80% of it, but Oliver Stone executive produced a film called Ukraine on Fire. You can watch it on Amazon Prime. I would highly recommend you see it. What I said about Charlottesville, and I said it before the guy crashed the car into stuff, is I'm seeing a lot of parallels with what happened in Ukraine, where there were protesters, then there's some antagonist in the group of protesters. The Euromaidan protest started off peacefully. Then suddenly there's antagonism within the protesters. And then it gets violent, right? And then when it gets violent, that led to a coup. That's the short version. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So when I saw what's happening in Charlottesville, this was my concern. And my concern was not, and I'm very critical of the anti-fascist leftist Black bloc people, but I'm also critical of what I saw as it being ginned up by people on the quote-unquote right, okay? It's the neo-Nazis. And when you look up, like the Tiki Torch thing that they did on Friday night, that the white supremacists did in Charlottesville, if you go to your web browser and type in Tiki Torch, just do Torch March Ukraine, you'll find almost identical pictures of these neo-Nazi groups in the Ukraine doing it, that are part of the political establishment.
Let me tell you what's something important. There's one of my favorite books, you know, I love to read. And I read a book called The Beast Reawakens, which I might have to reread because I think I'll find something here. The Beast Reawakens is about after World War II, what happened to the actual Nazis. Right.
Yes.
There were people who went around the world to spread this ideology. Nasser, they went to Egypt. They went to South America. You know what I mean? They went to places and they actually did things. This guy did research. His last name is Lee, but it's called The Beast Reawakens. And he talked about people who looked at the KKK in the South and they said, hey, those are people we could work with. And they sent people, and he has names of people who went and met with people, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
I think it would be interesting. What people don't realize is this. And that book opened my eyes to this, that people who have various ideologies, let's say they're in Europe, they're in wherever, Norway, wherever, right? That when they see someone in another part of the world, and this is not conspiracy theory stuff, as I said, read the book, The Beast Reawakens, a great book, documented names, etc., that they'll send somebody over. They'll send people and they'll say, hey, let's send some people. And that there are coordinated acts between groups. That's not, like I said, the book is The Beast Reawakens by the guy's last name is Lee. Read it.
Let me add to that, because we also know, for instance, that the CIA worked with actual Nazis and Ukrainian nationalists. See, these guys are the Ukrainian guys, this Svoboda Party. I got to learn to pronounce
that. One of the guys that started the CIA was a Nazi. His name started with a G. I can't remember his name. It's in The Beast Reawakens.
Okay.
In The Beast Reawakens. One of the guys that started the CIA was a Nazi guy who came over here from Germany.
But we're not just talking history, because these people have been in power. We put them in power in Ukraine.
Yeah.
Now, here's the other thing that's interesting about this, Garland. And by the way, here's the other thing you'll notice. If you look up Torch March Ukraine, you'll see these red and black flags. That's the flag.
That's the blood and soil flag.
The blood and soil flag of the Ukrainian insurgent army. Here's something one of my students at Citizen Journalism School sent me today.
I forgot the Nazis had a blood and soil thing going on.
They did. It's a Nazi thing. And by the way, there's plenty of pictures. John McCain, he doesn't like Nazis unless they're Ukrainian. Oh, Hillary Clinton doesn't like Nazis unless they're Ukrainian. Barack Obama comes out, white supremacists in Charlottesville. What about the ones you helped put in power?
I didn't know much about the Ukraine. I remember... The one thing I remember is shortly after the coup, when the new government came to Ukraine, was reading an article that said there were people now running around the country with anti-Semitic literature saying, throw out all the Jews. Immediately after the U.S.-aided coup in the Ukraine, that's the one thing I remember, because, you know, there's pretty nasty history if you ever look up the Ukrainian Red Guard.
That's right. Now, if you have any doubt whatsoever, about this, you've heard of David Duke, right?
I heard the name once or twice.
Yes. So David Duke is well known. He's the former KKK guy. And I don't know if you know this, he goes by Dr. David Duke. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
He goes by Dr. David Duke. And if you go to davidduke.com or just look up David Duke Ukrainian. Do you have any guess what country David Duke got his doctorate in?
It couldn't have been the Ukrainian.
It was the Ukraine. He's got an article up. Here you go.
David Duke earns full doctorate in Ukraine.
That's right. This is on his own site. David Duke got his doctorate in the Ukraine. Now, here's what I want to point out. I am opposed to neo-Nazis. I do not like them on a plane. I do not like them on a train.
I do not like them in the Ukraine.
I do not like them in the Ukraine. Exactly right. That was the redacted Dr. Seuss is what we're doing here. But here's the thing. This is hypocrisy to me. When we helped install them in the Ukraine, does that make sense? Literally, John McCain on stage, Victoria Nuland saying, I don't want him in the government, but he should be consulted 4 times a week. Victoria Nuland says that about the guy who was the head of this Svoboda Party. I'm going to get that name eventually. I keep wanting to reverse syllables there. But Here's the thing. You said you didn't know much about Ukraine.
Until 2014. The first thing that I remember really focusing on was I started reading these stories after the coup that said these neo-Nazis are running the country. Now they're emboldened and they're handing out that all of this anti-Semitic literature is starting to show up. It's showing up in towns. They're handing it out on trains. And I thought, wow, that's odd.
And you remember Bannon in that interview the other night said ethnic nationalists are losers. Remember he said that?
Mm-hmm.
That's a very clear distinction. There's ethnic nationalist and there's civic nationalist. So I'm a pro-American, but you're an American, Garland, and so is...
And I'm a, and I, whereas I'm a citizen of the world, and I'm pro-world. How's that?
Yeah, well, I'm...
I'm a, so if you're a nationalist, what will I be, an earthenalist or something?
No, you're a broadly leftist internationalist. I mean, I don't know else to put it. But
internationalist sounds a little too globalist.
But I just want to make, I want to make a clear distinction there. But here's the thing. I would be a nationalist in whatever country I'm in, but it's civic nationalism. It is not calling for separate ethnic nation states, right? It's not me saying I want White Sylvania, right, up in Montana or whatever, and you can be down in New Africa in the other part, and Aztlán can exist.
You're right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? That's ethnic nationalism, and people of all different races, the Malcolm X
grassroots
movement.
And that's where
you get ethnic
cleansing. That's where ethnic cleansing comes
that's
from,
exactly
that
right.
mentality.
And these people in the Ukraine, they're ethnic nationalists, which is why they did ethnic cleansing. That's
right.
why they killed so many people.
That was Czechoslovakia, same thing.
So I just want to point that out in Red Pill people. Go look that up yourself. You'll see it's all completely accurate.
I want to touch base on this, and that is Boston rally, thousands expected. So there's going to be two major protests in a Boston park. There's going to be a Boston free speech rally organized by a coalition of groups calling themselves libertarian and conservative. It's been booked since late July. And the protest, there's going to be people, and there's going to be protests by the Answer Coalition and the local chapter of Black Lives Matter. And it says, but since a group of neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and KKK members took to the streets in Charlottesville, Virginia, the expected attendance by protesters have grown substantially. So we got a Boston rally coming up. We've got, I don't know what the heck's going to happen
I don't know
here.
Anything about
but
this
I
rally.
It like
is, it,
this.
Is it with? Is it by neo-Nazis or
no,
is it by people in favor of
free
speech?
It's an organization that calls themselves libertarian and conservative. But here's what I have to say. Here's what needs to happen there. One of the things that needs to happen, and this is critical, is that the local enforcement authorities need to have a barrier.
Right.
And they need to say, look, the counter-protesters can't cross over here and the protesters can't cross over there and have a distance between, and I would call it, Lee, a throwing distance, where the average person, now maybe Brett Favre could heave something, you know, the distance. But
I would say a one-iron distance.
There we go.
It needs to be a few hundred yards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I really believe that, by the way.
Because
here's why. People can throw a bottle of urine, and they do.
Yeah, exactly.
And they really do. This happened. I saw this, where people were throwing urine.
And people have drones. I mean, they may drone a bottle of urine, you know, connect it to a drone, fly it over to the other side, and then release it. I mean, think about it.
I own drones, and you could not, a bottle of urine would crash your drone.
Too heavy.
Yeah, it's a little too heavy. Now, not that I've tried this. And my son, Jack, is here who flies. Don't think
Jack,
about it.
Jack, you haven't flown bottles of urine with drones, have you?
By the way, once you...
Good. Good idea.
Once you're flying around a bottle of urine...
Because I ain't touching that drone afterwards, dude. I ain't touching that drone afterwards. That's your drone forever. I'm not touching your drone if you're flying bottles of urine around it. That's all I'm saying. But you're right. Drone distance, or at least a couple hundred yards. So to me, as long as the local enforcement authorities, I don't care if they have to call out the guard, keeps a distance between the two, you shouldn't have a problem. And again, a lot of people say the problem in Charlotte was that they didn't have some kind of a barrier between the two. And if you don't, I've been, as I said, I was at a protest where there were anti-hunters and hunters. There were the Bow Hunters Association of Maryland and people who like were PETA or something like that, right? And we were there in the road. And if we hadn't had a barrier, they would have got to fighting over some stinking deer.
But let me point out the other thing that happened that makes it worse in Charlottesville, which is the white supremacist protesters, the white identity politics protesters, they had a permit. And the permit was upheld by a federal judge. And not only were they kicked out illegally, in my opinion, and that's important to note, but they were made to walk the gauntlet through the other protesters. So it's not like the protesters weren't even kept at a distance. The police said to them, in other words, here's what it is, and I don't care
that's not a big deal.
There were
people, skirmishes that started, the police were asked, they were told that skirmishes started and they didn't step in. So let's hope they're wise enough to do the right thing in Boston. We will be back next week. We're going to have a blast. And don't forget, do all the things online to follow us and listen to us, etc. You're listening to Fault Lines with Nixon and Stranahan.
Fault Lines.